You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. This is Civic Media Mornings. If you are in a Richland Center listening on WRCE or in Wisconsin Rapids listening on WFHR or even right here in Madison on WMDX, thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning to everybody in all the places along the network. It's fun to say that. All up and down the network. I feel like Larry King. Eau Claire, hello. 855-752-4842 is how you get a hold of us. 855-75-CIVIC. There is talk that Ghislaine Maxwell wants clemency. How much information do you think she would have to give for you to say yes to clemency? That's the question we want to know from you. Yes, Ghislaine Maxwell, the former girlfriend of Jeffrey Epstein, did not answer questions from House lawmakers on Monday. She was supposed to be giving a deposition. She kept pleading the fifth. She did, though, say that if President Trump ended her prison sentence, she was willing to go testify that neither he nor former President Clinton had done anything wrong in their connection with Epstein. And I'm sure Bill Clinton is like, don't lump me in with your garbage. I'm going in to prove myself that I did nothing wrong, because nobody's accused me of doing anything wrong. This, at least to me, smacks of, hey, I'll keep my mouth shut if you let me out.
That's exactly what this is.
And I'm surprised, Jamie, some Republicans agree with that assessment.
Yes, it is actually pretty surprising. But the House Oversight Committee really was looking for answers about how Epstein was able to abuse underage girls for years while moving among all these really powerful political and business figures. And while both Trump and former President Clinton spent time with Epstein in the past, neither at this point has been credibly accused of any wrongdoing.
Right.
Now, during the closed-door deposition yesterday, Maxwell's attorney said that said in a statement to the committee that Maxwell is prepared to speak fully and honestly if granted clemency by President Trump. Now, he did say that they're innocent, and Democrats said that it was a pretty brazen effort by Maxwell to have Trump end her prison sentence.
And she tried this before.
She has tried this before. This is where it gets a little surprising, because Trump has not ruled out granting Maxwell any sort of clemency at this point. Republicans pushed back on the notion, though, quickly, and rose basically saying this shouldn't happen. Right. And and there was a little bit of more news from last night. We'll get into that in just a few minutes. But Republican Representative Anna Paulina Luna, she's a little bit of a firestorm. I guess that's putting it lightly as far as what she's like and what her politics are like. She actually went to social media and said, "No clemency. You comply or face punishment. You deserve justice for what you did, you monster." Now, she was also outside, stopped by reporters last night outside of the Capitol, and they were asked about some of these comments she made and what, you know, if what her thoughts were on Maxwell asking for clemency. And here's what she had to say. Cut three, please.
You said that you do not support at all Ghislaine Maxwell getting any clemency for her testimony. And why is it important for her to be held accountable?
Well, because according to the files that we all saw, she was engaged in the trafficking and also rape of young women and potentially children. I don't think that she deserves any special treatment. She's a monster.
I mean, that's pretty blunt for a GOP representative to to have those words. Here's the thing. When someone manages to unite Marjorie Taylor Greene, Anna Paulina Luna, Nancy Mace, and even the U.S. Supreme Court in agreements as to whether or not you are a monster and should be serving a 20-year prison term, it's going to start raising an obvious question, at least to me. What kind of person are we actually talking about? And this is the type of person who probably shouldn't be roaming free amongst the rest of the world. Just my take.
The survivors released,
yes,
sent a statement to the committee yesterday basically saying the same thing, that she was not on the periphery as she claims. She was central to this entire operation. And again, pleading for justice, which I can't believe justice is still being denied to these formerly young girls, now women. It's even Lauren Boebert.
Yes.
You know, the theater maven, the woman who loves a good musical more than churning
for several reasons. But, I mean, yes, let's be honest. She sees them in a whole different way than the rest of us.
I've gone to a lot of theater, Jamie.
I haven't had the fun like she's had. Boebert. No, not no.
No. No, sometimes it's very boring. But yes, yeah, so it's still hard for me to fathom defending or covering this, because that's what's coming out from, yeah, everybody who sees these, because now Congress people can go in and read the unredacted. They can't bring their phones. They can't bring this or that. They can take handwritten notes and they can read them. And what we're hearing from a number of them is that there's still redactions that are there to protect people. And, yeah, Pam Bondi saying, well, if all these names were released, it would crumble the government.
Okay. Then crumble it.
Let's go. All right. I would rather have to start building the government again than live with the knowledge, yeah, that there's alleged pedophiles running the country.
You know, and here's the thing. You mentioned the victims and the statement they put out. Really, even entertaining this idea of clemency or even teasing it for Ghislaine Maxwell, it's literally a slap in the face to these women. And she has, as you mentioned, been repeatedly identified as a predator. She was not a bystander. She was not some sort of minor player in the abuse at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein. She was a central figure in this entire operation that exploited these children, now women. And honestly, if you're even thinking about it, if you're even toying with the idea of granting this woman clemency, and you're getting this much backlash from your own party, the reaction alone should tell you that that is toxic, it's unacceptable, and these victims, these survivors, deserve much more than even the thought of entertaining an idea like this.
Well, a year ago when he was granting all those pardons, when he pardoned all the January 6th insurrectionists, and he was handing out pardons like it was pens or those little boxes of M&Ms that they give you at the White House. He talked about it then. And at that point, he didn't, I don't really know her. I haven't really talked to anybody about it, but it's more theatrics,
yes,
to get people worked up. It's more, let me distract from the fact that people are going to find out that I'm mentioned 3,800 times in these files. By having them focus on, am I going to let Ghislaine Maxwell out of prison? I can't imagine. And if you have a daughter, if you have any females in your life, and I know it's hard because I'm not saying I can do it fully. Try to put yourself in their place. We are so intent on protecting the powerful that we are throwing victims, children, to the wolves. For some reason, our first response is always, don't believe the alleged victims. And me just saying alleged puts it in there too. Don't believe the victims. Don't believe the girls. Don't believe the women. There has to be another reason.
Sometimes people are just vile.
Yes. And the amount of times women lie about sexual assault is almost zero. It's probably the same percentage as voting irregularities.
Right.
You know?
And let's be real. Last week I shared that I was a victim and a survivor of domestic violence and sexual assault. And honestly, for the questioning that you go through and the pain that you go through, I can't imagine ever wanting to lie about that.
No.
Why
would you lie?
There's...
Well, the stigma
yes,
is not... of being a victim has been, for the most part,
yes,
erased. The stigma of lying about it,
right,
you will never wash that off.
Right.
Never.
And the fact that it is one of the most painful personal things you will ever go through, at least it was for me, would basically be any reason to never want to lie about it. Because who wants to make those things up? Nobody can make those things up. And I will say that what we're hearing from the documents was was not even in comparison to my story. But there is no reason for anybody to ever make that up, because it's painful. It's hard. It never leaves you. It required years of me talking and going through therapy just to be able to actually trust anybody again, right? So there's no reason to want to ever lie about that. Now, what I think is interesting about this entire case is just yesterday, along with all of this, Congress members were granted access to the unredacted files on Epstein. Mm-hmm. Lawmakers like Thomas Massie from Kentucky and Representative Ro Khanna from California identified six men whose names and photos were redacted without any clear legal justification. Jamie Raskin and a couple other Ohio representatives talked about the fact that as they were going through these files, there were victims as young as 9 years old. 9 years old. So a 9 year old, you're telling me, is just going to make this stuff up, right? Yeah. They're going to have the imagination, and they're going to be able to even understand what happened to them to just make these things up. And we're talking about potentially, you know, dangling this carrot of clemency for Ghislaine Maxwell. No, absolutely not. That is a personal attack on basically all of us by thinking we are stupid enough to be okay with that in this country.
855-75-CIVICS, how you get a hold of us. Mark's in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, my ex-wife struggled with mental illness and addictions for her entire life, and she was abused as a young child. So those scars just never leave, you know, even when you have healthy relationships with other people in your life. And, being as generous as possible to Donald Trump, which I hesitate to even do, that if he was aware that this stuff was going on, he did nothing to step up and defend those girls back at the time when Epstein and his cohorts were doing this stuff to young women. It's impossible for people in Trump, in Epstein's orbit, not to be aware of what was going on. So Donald Trump, for that matter, is just as guilty as the worst of the abusers, if indeed he wasn't an abuser himself, which I think he probably was based on the testimony I've heard, sworn testimony. If he was innocent of all this stuff, he would be suing those women because he does not want to go before the court and have to testify there, because they would eat him alive. And
exactly. Well, Mark, we appreciate the call. And yeah, we know how litigious the president can be. We're being sued. We as a country are being sued for $10 billion by our own president. So we know he loves to go to court, mm-hmm. or he loves to threaten to go to court. And, Mark's point is good. Those scars never leave.
Right.
Any childhood trauma, and I can't imagine the scars that are left from any sort of sexual abuse or physical abuse. That baggage is too heavy for anybody to have to carry.
They go deep. And, for me, luckily, I had a great support team, and I'll never speak for anybody else, but they run deep. When we're talking about some of these files, though, that the lawmaker saw yesterday, it's interesting because Jamie Raskin was the first one to come out and say that there's one foreign official, there's a well-known retired CEO, and a sultan. Who are also named in these particular documents that lawmakers are now going through.
Yeah.
I think the next few weeks could be interesting as they continue to go through those. It is 7:19 right now. You're listening to to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
Will cannabis ever be legalized in Wisconsin? We'll talk to somebody who is working toward that end. I'm Brian Noonan. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and you are listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And despite our neighbors in Michigan, Illinois, and Minnesota having access to legalized cannabis, Wisconsin continues their prohibition. No legal cannabis in this state. Well, last week, Democratic lawmakers gathered at the Capitol to announce their latest attempt to change that, to legalize recreational cannabis here in the state. Representative Darren Madison said across the country, the cannabis debate is over. 40 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized cannabis in some form. Well, we've got to figure out what's going on in Wisconsin. So we reached out to Jay Seltofner. He's the founder of the Wisconsin Cannabis Activist Network, the largest grassroots cannabis reform organization in Wisconsin. He was recently appointed to the advisory council for the Wisconsin Coalition for Cannabis Reform, and he is also the chair of the Legislative Affairs Committee for that. Jay, thanks for being here. You'll have the info. So let's start with, at this point, what is the level of support in Wisconsin among voters for the legalization of cannabis?
Overwhelming support. You know, going back to our historic referendums in 2018, in which we had city and countywide referendums on there, the numbers just keep growing, depending on if we're asking, you know, the percentages vary, whether we're asking about should we decriminalize, should we use medical marijuana. We even noticed some difference in support, whether we say recreational or adult use. But we're somewhere in the names of like 83% for medical marijuana if we combine most of the polls, somewhere near 70% for recreational.
Wow.
So,
yeah,
Jay,
it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so obviously, as Brian pointed out, Wisconsin is surrounded by states with legal cannabis. And so what are some of the real world consequences of Wisconsin staying illegal while many of our neighbors are moving forward?
You know, loss of tax revenue, economic benefit, jobs, the civil liberties issue of it comes into play, too, as far as, you know, using hemp as the low-hanging fruit for prosecuting minorities or even using the smell of hemp yet to conduct searches in the vehicle. So the hemp program in Wisconsin has kind of created a substitute for recreational marijuana. So we've had the last, you know, since 2022, we've kind of had I want to say a double-edged sword. Although we haven't had legalized cannabis under a state program, the federal program was filling the void there under the hemp program for both medical and recreational people. So that industry is charging general sales tax. So we do see an economic impact there. When we look at nationwide studies, obviously the federal hemp ban is in big news here too. So we were starting to feel some of the benefits of legal marijuana under the hemp program, which is currently under threat.
Let's drill down on that a little bit, because saying there's going to be an economic benefit or a jobs benefit or revenue, can we put a dollar amount on that so people can see exactly or close enough to exact how much Wisconsin is actually forfeiting at this point?
Yes. So interesting enough, I mean, we can pull, you know, sometimes those numbers, you know, people use numbers and statistics and, you know, try to manipulate them all they want.
Sure.
I go back to like a 1934 article in Popular Mechanics that talked about hemp being a billion-dollar crop in 1934. So if it was potentially a billion-dollar crop then, I can't imagine what it is now when we look at all of the true benefits from it, from, you know, not only the things you mentioned, job creation, taxation. You know, we may have hundreds of millions of dollars of additional tax revenue from the state just from point of sale tax. We have to remember the change in the model of prohibition also is going to result in a savings to the state of Wisconsin. Our public defender's office, you know, some of the entities that are involved in defending drug stuff in court, those entities are going to need less money in the budget. So we can't just look at, oh, there's a boom here. There's a savings also. When we do all of those numbers together, again, the numbers are staggering and overwhelming.
We're talking with Jay Seltofner, who is the founder of the Wisconsin Cannabis Activist Network. And Jay, you mentioned a little bit about the legal system. What does the legalization actually mean for law enforcement and the court system across the state? Does it actually alleviate some of the cases that we would see end up in our court system?
Yeah, very much. When we look specifically at like the state public defender's office, those are going to be our largest group of, you know, law enforcement slash tax paying entities that deal with that low level possession. So they've definitely requested less money each budget cycle if we would decriminalize marijuana. Definitely on the time resources end of it, it would allow our officers to focus on much more serious things also. The, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, when we talk about officers who live on the border, like the Marinette Menominee situation up in Wisconsin, I mean, they know full fact how many, you know, cars drive across the border each day to purchase the product. They've done numbers saying, you know, it would be statistically impossible for our police force to actually, you know, enforce the laws of simple possession with the amount of traffic that comes through our state. So,
Jay, we've got about a minute and a half left, but what are the biggest arguments that the Republicans have for continuing this prohibition?
You know, it's they don't have a lot of argument to stand on. Some of the stuff that they keep throwing up is the, you know, the gateway theory that cannabis use leads to harder drugs, which is not true. They keep saying that our law enforcement can't handle legalization, which again is not true. They definitely hammer on the drug driving thing a little bit more, that it's going to increase drug driving. If our officers aren't equipped to handle policing drug driving now, and specifically marijuana, then we're not equipping them to do so. And through the drug recognition expert programs, I believe our law enforcement can fully handle legalization. So they definitely lean to some of their own constituents, you know, so within that Republican Party, maybe if we look at their specific donor base, you know, their top 80% of their funds might come from, you know, only 20% of those donors. Some of those donors might be against it, and so they're following a lead from there.
Perfect. Well, Jay, thank you very much for joining us. We will talk again as this goes forward. Jay Selthoffner is the founder of Wisconsin Cannabis Activist Network. That's wiscocan.org, wiscocan.org.
It's 7:35 right now. We hope that you are having a great start to your Tuesday. Some warmer temperatures coming throughout Wisconsin. I mean, I can get down with almost 40 degrees. You're listening to the Civic Media Network, Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Welcome. If you want to get involved in the program, we'd love to hear from you. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. We've been spanning the globe in search of good news, we haven't found any. But let's turn our attention a little closer to home, Jamie. We have a few stories about things that are happening in Wisconsin. First of all, there have been a lot of research cuts under this administration. And if you're not a researcher, you might say, well, what's the big deal? Well, it is a big deal. And UW-Madison has lost at least $27 million in federal research funding since this administration began cutting or delaying grants. And the federal funding fell about 17%, which is a lot of money if you are a research university like Madison is and other research universities across the country. But let's focus on right down the street at UW-Madison.
Yeah, and school officials call this a bit of a double whammy, with fewer new grants and existing projects also being terminated. Some of these grants have been reinstated through court challenges, but the losses for the university remain significant. In fact, the university has worked with Wisconsin congressional delegation to protect some major programs, and Congress has actually blocked some proposed cuts to science agencies. So you've got the staffing cuts at federal agencies, which are slowing the research. You've got tighter immigration rules, which have reduced international students and threaten the university's ability to recruit some top talent. The H-1B visa program is under threat, and that's a proposed $100,000 fee per visa that would cost UW-Madison about $4.3 million annually. So obviously, school leaders warn that this impact could ripple through innovation. It could have detrimental it could cause detrimental factors to healthcare and also to the state's economy, not just to Madison, because UW has several entities all over the state that also help in some of these research. I mean, for a start, a party that's all about state rights, Brian.
Well,
they don't really
seem
concerned, do they?
No, they don't seem concerned, and it goes to an isolationist mentality. It doesn't matter. Plus, they fear research.
Yes.
They fear science. And Madison is right in our backyard, but then expand that out throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
Think of if this is happening in Madison, it's happening at all these other big research universities. Mm-hmm. It means the people who would be coming to research from other countries, it means people who would be getting paid to research here are not doing it. They're taking their research elsewhere. And it just puts America on a declining plane to falling behind the rest of the world. Again, instead of leading, we are with the illusion of saving money, we are putting our country more at risk. And again, you could say that it falls under national security, and I believe it does. If you are leading in research, whether it's mechanical research, health research, anything, you're going to lead. At this point, the administration seems content with making us followers and trailing along the rest of the world when it comes to research. And we know they, like I said, they don't like medical research. That's for sure.
No.
Anything that challenges their status quo is not welcome.
Progress doesn't happen in some sort of vacuum. I mean, science is a collaborative field, and turning inward really just puts any sort of long-term competitiveness and even the country's credibility and our system's credibilities at risk. Isolationism has always been a fear with this current administration. When they came into office in 2024, that was also 2025. Has it been 1 year or 2 years? How long have they been in office? It feels far
my
too long.
My entire life. It's I don't remember a time without this cloud hanging over my head.
It's not just me.
I'm like Schleprock from the old Gulliver's Travels cartoons, where I'm just walking along with this cloud over my head. I'm Eeyore. An everyday Eeyore.
That's right. You're like Olaf in Frozen, just a little cloud over the top of your head all the time.
See, now that's a reference I don't get.
Oh,
I
see?
Never saw Frozen. I mean, I know who Olaf
Parker
is.
Got that.
Yeah,
Boy,
Parker
Query, you've got that.
That. Jamie, good for you for reaching out to the younger demographic.
Thank you.
I have eschewed the younger demographic. I had pushed them to the side because they are smart alecky kids, and I don't have smart alecky kid references. I just have voices in my head doing battle nonstop.
It's okay. We need all of that to work together right now in unison.
Sure, we engage not in rage. I heard that somewhere. I don't know what.
Right, exactly. Maybe a thing or two I've said before. But I do think that this is going to be interesting because even just within the last week, the Department of War, I don't know if that's what we're calling it now, whatever
Pete Hegseth
calls himself.
That.
Officially, they've severed ties with Harvard too because they don't want to have any sort of military balance with a woke university. Because you allow culture, that's not woke.
They sent leaders there. They sent military leaders there to take some classes.
Right.
And Hegseth, in all his bro dumbness, went, they came back to Harvard. Yeah, because they can read multisyllabic words. You numbskull.
It's amazing what happens when you put, again, real information in front of people. They take it in and they can process it. And it's crazy how that happens.
Information in itself is not indoctrination. You can teach people things that if you have enough intelligence, you can parse out what makes sense to you and what doesn't. But at least you're exposing yourself to ideas and theories and how other people think. And that's another reason that they don't like colleges.
Yeah.
It's not instructors doing all this quote-unquote indoctrination. It's the fact that all of a sudden young people are being exposed to ideas that they may not have heard at home and meeting people that they may not have experienced in their neighborhood. And the world indoctrinates you.
Do you find it odd, though, that this administration, knowing what we know about how they operate in their insular bubble, is worried about indoctrination? Because I feel like that's what they are trying to do to the rest
of
us,
right?
They're
the kings of indoctrination.
Yes, yes.
Follow or be cast aside.
Yes, absolutely.
So that is what they're trying to do. They are really doing their best to indoctrinate us, and most of us are too smart to buy into it, and that infuriates them.
It does.
Because they don't have the mental capacity to debate it or argue it. It's here's what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
What do you base that on? Nothing. Just believe it.
We said so.
The laziest parenting move ever. Don't touch that. Why? Because I said so. All right. Well, I don't listen to you. You're not the boss of me. Stop.
Right. We've got Dick from Madison on the phone this morning. He had some comments about this research. Good morning, Dick. Thank you for joining us.
Well, we've destroyed all kinds of relationships with foreign countries that we depend on also for research. Mm-hmm. And that in hand is also destroying our national security. Nobody wants to share anything with us anymore.
Yeah, no, and you can't disagree with that. I mean, we're seeing that across the board on multiple levels, even when it comes to the attacks on the fishing boats in Venezuela. The British intelligence agency was like, oh, no, we don't want to be involved in whatever this is, so we're just not going to give you that information.
Yeah.
So when we're
weirdly, those boats have stopped sailing since we got
weird.
The oil. That's strange,
it's
isn't
so
it?
It's so strange. It really
since we
is.
We commandeered all that oil. Dick, thank you for
thank
the
you call. For
the call. We appreciate it. Anybody else wants to jump in, you know the number. And if you don't, I'll give it to you because that's the kind of guy I am. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. In other Wisconsin news, oh, this is good news. No, it's not.
It's not good news.
Governor Evers has gone after the Trump administration because they have denied Wisconsin's appeal for federal disaster relief to repair roads, bridges, parks, and other public infrastructure that was damaged by the historic flooding in August. Remember that? Sure, some of you are still dealing with that damage. So is the state. Are we going to get help? No. Know why? Because we have a Democratic governor. Oh, is that the real reason? Yes.
Yes.
Is that the reason they're telling us?
No. No, absolutely. So Evers actually has blasted the decision in probably one of the most forceful things that I've ever heard Governor Evers say, mostly because I think he's tired of fighting this. This is something that most presidents, when there is a natural disaster heading towards a state, right? Most
yes.
presidents before our current administration will basically put out some sort of disaster declaration and sign over funding for the recovery efforts before that natural disaster
right.
even hits, because they want to be able to hit the ground running and start helping and rebuilding infrastructure and helping homeowners or whatever it may be, business owners. But FEMA says without any sort of explanation that they're just not going to cover what happened in Milwaukee. There was an estimated $26.5 million in damages across six different counties during that historic
wow.
flooding. Evers warned that the ruling is going to leave local taxpayers on the hook for tens of millions of dollars in rebuilding costs. Milwaukee County Executive David Crawley said that this denial undermines public trust, and he has pledged to work with state and local leaders to find alternative funding. Now,
well, this is more of the talking out both sides
yes.
of your mouth, because we want the federal government to run the elections, but we want the state to handle all the disaster
right.
relief. And he had threatened this before. Again, if somebody tells you what they're going to do, you better
yes.
believe them, because if you don't, you're going to be caught. And that's what, unfortunately, Wisconsin is caught in and other places
yes.
are caught in, because they said they're not going to why should we help blue states? They don't vote for us. Why should we help them?
But here's the thing. This particular administration makes calls like this, and they aren't just punishing Democratic governors. They're actually
right.
hurting other voters who vote
yes,
Republican, because
there's a lot of Republican voters
yes.
here in Wisconsin who are hurt too.
Yes.
But that doesn't matter, because he believes that those voters will stay loyal no matter what. No matter what happens, he believes, and I don't know if that's true with Republican voters. We'd love to hear from you. You know, if your property, if your area was damaged by this, and all of a sudden your government is not going to help because of who your governor is, that
yeah.
to me, that doesn't seem right.
But I think it's fascinating that in 2025 alone, states like Arkansas, West Virginia, North Carolina, Kentucky, they all face denials also, or major delays in FEMA disaster assistance after tornadoes, floods, hurricanes, fires, and windstorms. And yes, there were some Democratic-leaning states in there as well. But the ones I just listed do not. They're either very purple or they vote very, very Republican in almost every election. So I think it's an interesting take for this administration to say, we're just not going to help you. We're just not going to help you. We're not going to give you infrastructure. We're not going to allow businesses to reopen or for you to get back into your homes. That's fine. You don't need those things.
The worse off people are, the easier it is for someone to come in and be the white knight.
Yeah.
And when you're at your lowest, you will accept help from just about anybody. And I would wager that may be some of the thinking. I don't know for sure. That's just an opinion. You probably have your own opinion. You can always share it with us. But listen, Jamie, we need some sort of boost before we get
We do.
So perhaps we will have one because IKEA has a new hot dog.
They have a large hot dog, in fact. And we're going to talk about
and that's not a euphemism.
It's not. Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We'll talk about that on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hot dog, you say you're really coming back. Hot dog, I'm waiting at the railroad track. Hot dog, you say you're coming home.
It's 7:52 right now. Boyquarium, always on task with the right bumper music. Thank you very much, Parker. Much appreciated. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. This is the Civic Media Network. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. I'm choking for some reason.
Are you okay?
Excuse me. Yeah, I'm fine.
Nobody there to give you the Heimlich. So.
No, I'm not choking on anything. I'm going to do this.
Okay. All right. We'll let Brian have a moment. But are you good now?
Yeah.
Okay. Better. All right. Cool.
Something just got there. I hear hot dog, and I immediately think Costco. You're going to have to, if you're a retailer, you're going to have to go a long way to beat the Costco hot dog deal.
The $1.50
never going up. Hot dog and pop, forget about it. It's the lunch of champions and the budgetarily confined.
Mom's best friend. When you got littles, it is also a mom's best friend. That and a big old slice of pizza, one of those things always is helpful when you're a mom with littles in tow doing some shopping. And heck, the teenagers like it too. It's fine.
Oh, sure. When we would go shopping with Molly when she was a kid, $4.50, everybody were getting lunch for $4.50 for the three of us?
Not after I just spent like $300 at Costco. Yes, this is what you get. Here's the five that I have left. Go nuts, kids.
There is a bar in Whitewater. You can get two hot dogs and a beer for $6.
Oh, yeah, because it's awesome. A college town.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Totally catering.
Oh, yeah.
Forget it. Drinking and eating in college towns is the best.
Exactly.
Not a college city.
No,
like Madison
a town.
Caused
a small town.
A town where the college is the thing.
Yes, absolutely.
That's when we went and visited Carbondale last year, and Debbie and I went out. $6 for a pitcher. I'm like, woohoo.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
it's
never
a bargain.
Leaving. I'm
there
going
you go.
Back to school. I'm going to be Rodney Dangerfield, do a triple Lindy off of something. But if that's great if you're in a college town, you're spending no money. If you're going to buy a Farfignugan or a Flugeschlafer or something from IKEA with their impossible-to-follow directions because it's stick figures from another land.
It's like Legos for adults.
Oh, my God.
It's impossible.
I've bought many things from IKEA. Mm. I've cursed the Swedes.
Yep.
My entire time that I put them together,
yep.
Then I'm fine with it once they're together.
It's a halfway sturdy piece of furniture if you don't have leftover parts when you're done.
I'm looking at a piece of it right now here in here in the studio.
Been there.
There.
Your studio.
My studio.
There we go.
My studio. My makeshift ramshackle broadcast hub deep beneath the surface of the earth. But the whole reason we're talking about this, we will get to the point.
Eventually.
Listen, after this morning,
news is
hard. news is hard, but a 1.5-foot hot dog coming to IKEA's.
Yes.
They announced it at the end of January with the tagline, because the good moments should last longer.
Yeah.
Again, not a euphemism.
No, it is not a euphemism. Now, currently, this 1.5-foot hot dog is only going to be available in the United Arab Emirates, priced at equivalent of about $5.
Now, I'd pay $5 for a 1.5-foot hot dog.
I would.
That's not a bad price.
The thing that I think is interesting about this is that the type of meat used in this hot dog has not been disclosed, because nobody really wants to actually know what's in the hot dog, right? But they put it on a
regular... It's made with the blood of the dissenter.
They put it on a regular size bun, which I think is
oh,
wild.
Oh, no, no.
You know, that's what they're doing.
No. So I know, but you can't do that.
You've got like the half the hot dog is not in a bun, and it's just hanging off the edges.
No.
And this is actually a thing that's happening at IKEA in the UAE.
I know, but that's unacceptable. And that's why, that's the other problem. You know, buns and hot dogs, it's the ongoing debate. Why do we have 8 buns and 6 hot dogs or blah, blah, blah. But you have to have the right size. That's why I like a sausage roll.
Sure.
Usually it fits, the bratwurst fits in there perfectly. Or when you're making like Italian sausage, you can cut the bread to fit the thing. Hot dog buns never really fit the hot dog, and I don't like the hanging over part.
At least now there are some hot dogs that are bun length, so they're the exactly the right length to go into the hot dog. And now they also have buns that like are sliced down the top, so you don't have to do that rip apart thing on the edge, and you know the hot dog squeezes out the side where that seam is. It just stays like right in the center. Like, you have to be a real connoisseur
of these
things.
It's like a lobster roll bun.
Yes.
And I like that, because the design flaw in a hot dog bun, when you separate it from the others, the seam gets very thin.
Yes.
And I like a lot of mustard and relish and onion.
Right. You
got to
pack it
on there.
And then you're wearing it, though. You're wearing it when the seam gives out eventually.
And I don't want to eat a hot dog like a sandwich. I want to eat a hot dog like a hot dog. I want to have it folded taco-like, and I want to just jam it in.
Because contrary to the debate, hot dogs are not sandwiches. They're just not.
This
is not a thing. Now, this IKEA launch, though, is part of their broader focus on expanding their hot food offerings, because they want to move beyond the meatballs. Like, why mess with a good thing? But okay, I get it.
I've
bigger
never had
audience.
The Swedish meatballs there.
They're fine. Again, I'm not really sure what meat we're using, but we don't ask the questions, because when you're on the fifth floor of IKEA and you're, you know, still trying to parse through the warehouse to go pick up your stuff, you need a little sustenance, because you know you're going to be about in there 5 hours.
I do like the Wizard of Oz aspect of an IKEA where you just follow the yellow brick road and you go through, oh, and here's my room. There's a schnuggenflogger again.
Don't ever go backwards, though, because it's a trip because you get lost completely.
No,
like, it is not meant to go back the other way.
Once you start it, it's enter and exit, and that's it.
You end up through weird doors that only the employees are allowed through. Like, trust me,
Corey
and I've been there.
That's where you see the meat that goes into the meatballs.
This is true.
You hear the grinding and the screaming and the wailing of the lambs.
Yes. So earlier in January, IKEA actually released a plant-based sausage. This features kale, lentils, quinoa, onion, and carrot. It's designed to replicate the flavor, look, and texture of a traditional meat dog. No, it's not. Nobody's buying that. It is available globally, and they are selling it as well at their bistros, and you can also get take-home packages. They're about 16 ounces for $7.49. But you're not fooling anybody that this is a hot dog. And I get it, for the vegans out there. I totally understand.
For the vegans and vegetarians, I love that vegans and vegetarians still want to make things that taste like meat.
It's a
veggie. Hey, it tastes just like meat. You know what else tastes like meat?
Meat. It's a veggie.
Delicious.
It's a veggie.
And I can't, listen, don't at me. If you're a vegan or a vegetarian, that's your game. I'm good. I'm not
good
yucking your
it.
Yum. I just find things amusing. That's all.
That's right. 7:59 right now. Thank you for joining us today. Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Thanks for listening and being part of the program. We will talk to you again tomorrow on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.